Diary Materials. Reforms in Food Preparation. 1894. The idea that we must have porridge for our breakfast dish every morning, else we are not health reformers, will meet with a change ere long. Let those who can masticate their food eat slowly of that kind of food which requires mastication, giving a chance for the saliva to mingle with the food. Great reforms may be made in the preparation of food. The cook need not be continually looking to prepare desserts to please the taste. We cannot give any prescribed rule to work upon, but let there be in every family close examination to see if that which they call health reform needs not to be reformed in many respects. We do not recommend a meager diet, but a plentiful supply of fruit and vegetables, but both ought not to be used at the same meal. At one meal, eat only one or two kinds of food, such as bread and fruit. At the next meal, bread and vegetables. The placing of a large variety of dishes upon the table is not for the health of those who partake of the dishes. We hear it often said, "I love rich food. I was always furnished with rich food and an abundance of it in my home life, and my taste was educated to enjoy a rich diet." I have been pained to hear those who have been supposed to be not only health reformers, but educators in this line, make these remarks. While we should have plenty of nutritious food, let there be a constant, intelligent, decided action in the line of encouraging simplicity. Study to prepare inexpensive dishes for the table. Seventh-day Adventists who profess to be health reformers should not be misleading in their own habits and practices. They should not, either by precept or example, give the one who is preparing food for the table a false education in cooking. Educate in economical habits. Time is money. It belongs to God. To use precious time in the preparation of a variety of dishes that will only create dyspepsia is not wise. The cook may be made a slave to cater to appetite, or, by careful consideration, she may find time to read her Bible, to pray, to have some relaxation from labor. Selfishness and self-indulgence are not to be cherished or taught the people by our example. We need to know thoroughly what we are about and what we are doing in leaving impressions upon the minds of those who are looking to us for an example. Those who stand as educators should, by their own practices, teach correct habits and simplicity in everything. Reformers need reforming in their habits of cooking, in their habits of dress, and in their manner of labor. The school. Our school has been a means of great good in developing talent and in establishing the minds and hearts to obey the truth. I discern the future as a most important period in the education and training of youth. There will be constantly battling with poverty. The believers in America do not take in the difficulties to be met in this country. They see many things that they want should be done, but in their own country, and they fail to extend their vision afar off. There will be no temptation of much money to use in the advancement of the work in this country. Very many circumstances will arise which the finite agent has no power to control. There will be disappointment and discouragements. There is most earnest work to be done for our youth, and the laboring will be harder to handle in the future. Some will burn with desire to stand high in scholarship, and will need to restrain from intense study. If allowed, they would sacrifice health and life itself before they awake to their peril. If these souls keep the glory of God constantly in view, Satan will not overcome them with his masterly temptations. If the saving grace of God, the science of salvation, is exalted as it ought to be as the highest science, and the students work as if in view of the whole heavenly universe, then truth will bear away the victory. The youth who are truly converted will be a help and blessing to all with whom they are connected. Hitherto, there has been a class attending the school whose character is known, who love and fear God, but they needed to obtain more knowledge of the sciences and the Bible. The influence of this class has been a great blessing to the school. They were ready to help in the spiritual work and have in a measure carried the burden. The principal could rely upon them to help him. But this class will not in large number take the course of study hereafter. While this is so, every means must be employed to preserve the high standing of the school. While there will be some who are true and faithful, who may be relied upon to maintain discipline and order, there will be others whose course of action will bring their teachers into great perplexity. For there will be decided reluctance to resort to severe measures in endeavoring to repress evils that may arise. There will need to be much courage and persevering and earnest effort to bear the burdens gracefully in the future. Satan's efforts to counterwork the truth. The morals and success of the school will be determined in a large measure by its location. If this matter is settled according to mere human judgment, there will be constant uphill work and much disappointment. All our cities are hotbeds of iniquity. Satan is working with intense activity to perfect in evil the minds of human agents that are given to his control. Evil angels conspire with evil men, and the whole energy of apostasy is concentrated to counterwork every effort that shall be made by the missionaries, by the champions of truth, and to destroy their influence. For a time, success will appear to be with the majority. The heel of the seed of the woman is bruised. He came unto his own, and his own received him not. John 1, verse 11. The churches in the world walk together in spirit, following their leader. The law of God is made void, and truth is rejected for error. Any institution we may establish in or near a city will be a target for the enemy, and no means will be wanting to counterwork the truth of God by opposing those who advocate the binding claims of the law of God. That law has for its foundation a plain, "Thus saith the Lord," and the advocates of Sunday sacredness will be driven to take one of two positions, either to accept the Scriptures as inspired of God, acknowledging the truth as it is in Jesus, or to invalidate the Scriptures as not inspired. There is to be stern, earnest conflict. Every sophistry, every falsehood forged in Satan's workshop will be urged upon men with all his deceptive wiles. Any disrespect to the laws of the country will rouse the same fierce spirit that was revealed in the trial and crucifixion of Christ when Pilate and Herod were the chosen authorities by the Jewish nation, priests and rulers, to deliver up Christ to them to be crucified. The churches of the various denominations have the same spirit that the Jewish nation exemplified. The church and the world will unite in a corrupt confederacy to make void the law of God, and teach and enforce the commandments of men. They will not consent to change their own false theories for Bible truth. The carnal mind is not subject to the law of God, neither indeed can be. Romans 8, verse 7. The warfare is to be determined and wax more fierce and still more determined and cruel to the very close of time. The church is not converting the world, but the world is converting the church. There will be honest souls who will receive evidence and take their position for the truth, but there will also be those who will be convinced and who will not have moral courage to brave the consequences of accepting the truth. They will refuse to drink of the cup from which our Savior drank, the bitter draught. They will not be baptized with the baptism of suffering with which He was baptized. They desire heaven, but they would not reach it by an easy way. They desire to have the favors of the world and the favor of Christ, which is impossible.